Hello and welcome to the Porter County Council At-Large Debate here on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Porter County. I'm Tom Maloney with 89.1 FM, and I'll be your moderator tonight. Joining us are five candidates for Porter County Council At-Large: Democratic incumbents Sylvia Graham and Dan Whitten, and newcomer Susie Tavesky. Your Republican candidates are Andy Bozak and Mike Brickner. Voters will be choosing three at-large candidates on Election Day or Early Voting Day. Each candidate will have 60 seconds for their opening statements. They'll all be allowed 60 seconds to answer each question as put forth. Linda Kruger, a member of the League of Women Voters of Porter County, is our timekeeper once again, and she'll let you know when your time is up. And then at the duration of the debate, each candidate will have 60 seconds for their closing statements. We've drawn numbers already tonight to determine who goes first for the opening statements. The order is as follows: Mike Brickner, followed by Dan Whitten, Susie Tavesky, Andy Bozak, and Sylvia Graham. Mr. Brickner, you now have 60 seconds for your opening statement.
Thank you, Tom, and thanks for having me and hosting this forum and this opportunity. Mike Brickner, I'm retired chief of police from Valparaiso Police Department. I served a total of 31 years with the police department, last 13 years as chief of police. Currently the director of operations at Lake County Community Corrections. The last 16 years of my career, I've spent in administrative positions managing multi-million dollar budgets, overseeing quite large departments with several employees. You know, three things that I'm really interested in, and I look at this as an opportunity fund the MAC Center, which I think is a need. It's a hidden gem here in Porter County, a training facility for public safety, and also to just wisely manage, have wisely managed growth within Porter County. I think that we're very fortunate to be aesthetically pleasing to several of our residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Whitten, you have 60 seconds for your opening statement.
Thanks so much, Tom, and thanks to the League of Women Voters for hosting this. This is a great opportunity. My name is Dan Whitten, and I am running for re-election. Just a few things about myself. I have a law practice with my wife, Stacy, in Portage. In my prior life, I was a combat Army veteran and a longtime police officer. So I've spent my entire adult life serving as a public servant in some shape, form, or fashion. So I've always carried the mantra in every one of those hats that I've worn: make your community a better place than how you found it. And that is how I've spent my time on the county council thus far, and I will continue to do that to give everybody a seat at the table in county government and make this a better county to come to stay at, and to raise our families. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Mm-hmm. Ms. Tilvesky, you have 60 seconds for your opening statement.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Susie Tilvesky, and I'm a candidate, of course, for Porter County Council at large. I'd like to thank Tom and Linda, and also the League of Women Voters and Lakeshore Public Media. I'm running because I believe it is time to bring new leadership into the council, and it's time to change this county for the better. And if we don't get new voices into the county council to bring new perspectives, new vision, we're really not going to be moving forward in any meaningful way. I am the daughter of immigrants, and my dad is a retired steel worker. I am hoping, of course, to institute some changes in the council. One is to do an efficiency audit to make sure that our county is running at the highest level possible for the taxpayer with the taxpayer dollars, and that there's no waste, fraud, or abuse. I'm also hoping to institute a grant-making process in the Porter County Government Foundation, which has not been done yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Ms. Graham, you have 60 seconds for your opening. I'm jumping ahead here. Mr. Bozak, you have 60 seconds for your opening statement. My apologies.
Well, hello, everyone. My name's Andy Bozak. I'm running for county council. I had previously served a couple years back on the county council and a year as president, so I do have some familiarity with it. My wife and I are raising four beautiful kids here in Burns Harbor, Indiana. I've lived here for quite some time. My wife serves on the town council in Burns Harbor, and we're very involved in our community. I feel that our county has been on a good path. We've done a lot of good things. When I was on the council to this date has made some good decisions. But I feel that there's still a ways to go, and I feel that it's time for me to jump in and see how much I can, or see what I can do to help again. You know, one of my big things is communication. I'm very good at making sure that I'm available to not only the people that work for the county, if different department heads or people have questions, but for the general public too. And I give out my cell phone number freely. If anyone wants to call me, that's 219-508-7152. People do call, so feel free to, and I'd like to ask for your vote come this November 3rd or before. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bozak, and hopefully this doesn't go viral for the sake of your cell phone bill.
He gives it to everybody.
Ms. Graham, you have 60 seconds for your opening
Hello,
statement.
Hello, I'm Sylvia Graham, and I'm a longtime Porter County resident. I'm married to Jack. We have two daughters, four grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. I'm a retired family nurse practitioner and a retired 4-H, I'm sorry, a 4-H leader of Porter County. I'm completing my third term in the office, and I feel like we've done a great job. I'm proud of what we've done in Porter County. And I think my record speaks for itself, and I would like to serve another term. I have the time, and I feel like I have the availability, and I'd very much like to have your vote on November the 3rd.
Thank you, Sylvia. And keep your mic unmuted. You will be answering first. We'll be going in reverse order from the opening statements. And candidates, if you need me to repeat a question, please let me know. And again, Linda will be starting the time when you begin your answer, not when I'm finished asking the question. What particularly attracts you to the job of county council? What skills do you have that would make you well suited for the job? And which of the council's responsibilities are of particular interest to you? Sylvia, you'll begin first.
Well, that's a mouthful. You had three questions there and 60 seconds. I feel as if I'm available and I help people with problems that they have. I think my experience is a big asset for me, and transparency in government is very important to me. I feel as if we've got a tremendous start to have job growth in Porter County, and I feel like it's the responsibility of the council to help keep job growth going in the county.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your answer.
Well, a little bit about my history. As I mentioned, I was on the Porter County Council before. I've served as the president, the chairman of the board. So I know how it works. I've got the experience. I've also been on the Burns Harbor Town Council and different roles in Burns Harbor, the RDC, and served in different positions around the town. So I have the history and the knowledge to do the job. One of the reasons that I'm really interested in doing the job is because the county council is in charge of all the money. And being a fiscally conservative representative, I want to make sure that whatever we do, we make sure that we keep taxes as low as possible. Try not to raise them. I'm not for raising taxes. Obviously, there comes a situation that might arise that we'll have to tackle something with COVID, but I'm hoping that that doesn't happen. And one of my strengths is making myself available, being there to hear people out if they have problems and trying to take those problems, even if they're not a county council responsibility, and still provide a solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds to answer.
I'm sorry, Tom, I keep forgetting to unmute. yes, I was attracted to running for the council because of some problematic issues that I spotted in 2017. As you know, we do have a Porter County Government Foundation. At that time, the domestic violence shelter, the caring place, had gone to the foundation asking for funds in their project to build a brand new facility. And they were denied these funds. And part of the reasoning was because they didn't have a grant-making process established. Well, I was really dumbfounded by this because, of course, they've had this foundation in place for many years, and it didn't make sense to me that there was not a grant-making process established. So I became interested in, of course, running for county government. I also am concerned with any kind of wasteful spending in county government, and I would like to make sure that we are, you know, trimming the fat if there is any problems. My main skills, of course, is that I'm extremely open-minded. I'm quite a sociable person. I like to listen to people. I will always be available and listen to everyone who comes. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you very much, Tom. So a couple things. One is the foundation was not open and running for years in 2017. In fact, it wasn't created until late 2016. But as a municipal attorney, I represent several municipalities. I understand what government can and cannot do and should and should not do. And as a bankruptcy attorney, I understand the importance of keeping the cost of living affordable for our families in Porter County, which is why I'm so proud that we have one of the lowest tax rates, county tax rates in the region, and the second lowest income tax in the state. We want this to be a safe, and we want it to be a flourishing and prospering county, and we want to make sure that it's affordable for our families, and that we give them an opportunity to have growth in their homes, growth in their lives, and growth in our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. And finally, Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you. Well, local government is the most effective form of government that we have, whether it's national, state. Now we're talking about county, and that's a big reason that I'm throwing my name in the ring for this. Also, we have, I bring to the table some leadership and experience in both city and county government. That I think separates me from some of the other candidates. And really right now we need a fresh look and some new eyes on what's happening in county government. Now is not a time for people to be running for county council or any form of government with the challenges we face just because they think it's fun or they possibly need health benefits. This is not a job that should be a career. It's a privilege and an opportunity, and I think that some of the, you know, no offense to some of my fellow candidates, but there's some people been here too long, and it's time for a fresh look.
Thank you, Mike. And just under the buzzer, answering first on this question will be Andy. And this question is asking more about county services and finances, not about the pandemic's impact on businesses. So just a heads up for all the candidates. What are your primary concerns about how COVID-19 will affect county business and operations in the upcoming term? Specifically, what actions do you think the county council should take to ease the effects of the pandemic within Porter County? Andy, you have 60 seconds.
Well, obviously, I think everyone already knows that they're expecting lower revenues due to the COVID pandemic hitting. And the county council, I've been kind of following on what they've been doing. They took the time to go through the budgets, kind of cut some of the budgets down to where they were saving money in some ways. They were still able to do increases for some of their employees and help them out. And I think that was a very important move. I think they've taken some strong steps this year, but next year is going to be another who knows what's going to happen next year. So we're going to need to continue down that path, continue looking at budgets, seeing where we can trim the fat, seeing where we can pull the money back to make sure that we're not increasing taxes, that we're still offering the services, that we're still taking care of our infrastructure, our roads, our buildings, continuing to still grow, but at a controllable level with the amount of revenue that we would have coming in. And who knows what's going to happen next year.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response.
I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to unmute. I just want to go back quickly to a point that Dan made about the hospital foundation money. The hospital was actually sold in 2007, and the funds actually became available in 2012. So from that time, I know it's been invested for a long time. start off with $120 million, and now we're up to about $175 million. So there is still no grant-making process that has been established. Those hospitals, when they are sold like that under federal law, it requires that the proceeds of the sale of the assets of tax-exempt entities be directed towards charitable purposes. They have, in fact, not really been directed towards charitable purposes. I do know that they have given money to three organizations, very limited funds. I believe it's a total of $1.5 million. So let's just be very, very clear on this, that, in fact, no one can access that money through a grant-making process. It's time to get that going. As your next county councilor, I certainly will take that initiative on behalf of the people of Porter County, the charitable organizations of Porter County, and local community.
Thank you, Susie. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
So I'll go back to my earlier answer, Susie. Actually, the foundation was created in 2016, and that is when we were allowed to start spending the money, okay? So, and it's not federal law, it's state law. My advice would be to do your homework. I will tell you this, that we are going to be facing some financial stresses. The expected decrease from the income tax will probably occur in 2022, which is agreeing with Andy, which is why we were so conservative in our budgeting this year. And we have always been conservative. So I will say that I do believe that the creation of $50 million of capital projects and putting $50 million of people to work is undoubtedly going to help the working families of Porter County get through this stressful financial time. And again, as a bankruptcy attorney, I understand what that looks like and how that feels.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response. Oh, Mike, you're muted. Please unmute yourself and we'll restart the timer then. Thank you.
We are definitely in some challenging times with the COVID challenge. And to be honest with you, I think the council is already acted not with courage. We want to pay our people, employees, competitive wages. But at a time like this, approving arbitrary salary increases, which the current council has already done, when we're facing uncertain financial situations with COVID, this is a time to be popular or make decisions because you want to be somebody's friend. It's a time for somebody to be in there that has the courage to do the right thing. And the right thing was to hold on some of these wages until we do know where we are financially as a county. And that ship has already sailed. They've already passed the budget. So to say that the current council is doing what they should be doing is not an accurate statement. And again, we have $174 million in this account, and we need to spend it wisely.
Thank you, Mike. That's your time. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, in my opinion, the council has already moved a lot. We know that gas taxes are not going to be up to par, and also our casino money is going to be way down. So we've already taken moves to guarantee that we have the money by cutting our budgets. We asked people in the departments to really cut their budgets this year. We had no new employees except for one. But I want to say, I think that we have the money, we're solvent, and we know how to budget, and we will not have any difficulty in covering what we have to cover for next year.
Oh, I have to unmute myself now. See, we're all in this together. Thank you, Sylvia. Answering first on this question will be Susie. Porter County is one of two counties that has the lowest county tax rate in the state of Indiana. How important is it to you to maintain this rate? In what circumstances or for what reasons would you be opening to raising the county tax rate? And why or why not would you consider raising that tax rate during the upcoming term?
Well, Tom, that's an interesting question. I am aware that we are one of the counties that has the lowest tax rate in Indiana. And I would have to do an evaluation, actually, as to whether we are getting our biggest bang for our buck. If there, for example, I've heard complaints that the prosecutor's office, the deputy prosecutors, are not well-funded, and neither are the public defenders. I've also heard complaints that the sheriff department deputies are, you know, being paid a little bit below than what they should be paid. So I am concerned about those things. You know, we could still have low taxes, but it doesn't mean necessarily we have to have the lowest taxes. I'm not sure why people are bragging about that over and over again. This is a very big county, a fairly wealthy county, actually, and I just want to make sure that we are funding county government properly and that the people that are working for our county government are actually being paid adequately, on par with every other county here in Northwest Indiana. We are competing for the workforce, and we need to fund them properly.
Thank you, Susie. Up next is Mike. You have 60 seconds. Or excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead here. I apologize. Dan. Dan has 60 seconds for his response.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, we do have one of the lowest. We're half a percent income tax, as opposed to Lake County's, which is 1.5, and LaPorte County's, which is 1. I brag about that because I like the fact that we make our county affordable for our families. We attract families into our county, not out of our county, and I think that's very important. Having met with so many people that are struggling, I think every dollar counts for them, and I'm not going to dismiss that with rhetoric. I will say this, that the question of the income tax, I would like to look to the cities and the towns, get some direction from them, some input from them. The property tax caps have cost some of our municipalities millions a year. So I'd like to hear what they have to say and bring all the stakeholders to the table and have a really educated discussion about the road ahead and how we should approach it with taxes.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you now have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, being a lifelong resident of Porter County and enjoying the quality of life like all of our other residents, nobody wants to see their taxes raised. And at this point, there's no really reason to do that. I think that at this point on the council, we need individuals that are visionary, though. We can't just continue. We can't live in the present and make decisions based on where we are currently. You know, members of the county council working with the county commissioners, working together, collaboration, need to have a vision, a long-term vision for the county, because we are responsible for quite a bit of money. And but to sit here and say, you know, there's no reason to raise our taxes at this point, but we also have to have a plan, a strategic plan that that we hold to. But we need people on the council that can formulate that plan and stick to it. But at this point, there's no reason to raise taxes. I don't see any reason in the near future to have to do that.
Thank you, Mike. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, I have always ran on the presumption that I do not want to raise taxes. I feel like I'm on a limited income, and I have a lot of empathy for people that are on a fixed income. However, I'm open to listen, but I still think that we have a wonderful quality of life in Porter County. And I just don't, and I feel like one of the things that attract people to our county is the low taxes, and it's affordable to live here. And for those reasons, I'm really not that much in favor of raising taxes.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
I guess during this time, I'm surprised that we're talking about raising taxes. Obviously, with the COVID situation going on, people are hurting for money. And as Sylvia mentioned, there's people that are on fixed incomes. And a small tax increase to you or I may not hurt you. But to those people, it could really hurt them. And I think it's very important that we take that into consideration. Yeah, I'd like to have more tax money coming in, but I don't want to raise taxes. I mean, so obviously that doesn't jive. But I want to make sure that we're continuing to take care of the people we have. We are in a good situation. We're not in a bad situation. So why would we need to increase taxes now? I think our council has done a good job in spending the money that we have coming in. Granted, there's always some ways we can be better, and we should always be looking to improve. And that's why I think it's important that you guys vote for me, because I'd like to get involved and get more into the numbers again, back like I was in 2018, where we were able to look at things and take serious cuts where they were needed. but also still investing in our community. As Dan mentioned earlier, we've invested $50 million.
Thank you, Andy. That is your time. Dan, you'll be answering first on this question.
Right.
Earlier this month, the county council approved raises for county employees, raising the base pay to $30,000 a year and giving across-the-board raises of 3% to employees earning up to $65,000 a year and 2% to employees making more than that. Do you agree or disagree with the decision? Why or why not?
Well, I obviously agree with it because I voted for it. Here's the thing. We live in the most prosperous, solvent county in the state of Indiana. We are carrying over right now $7.7 million in our foundation fund. It's probably going to be more if the economy doesn't tank by the end of the year. We are doing well. And I wanted our employees to get a cost of living increase. Why would we want to store up money at the expense of our hardworking employees? Now that does include, police officers and folks in the government center and, emergency care services folks. I mean, you would never want to turn your back on them. They're also feeling the impact of COVID. They're also struggling through this. What a terrible time not to give them a raise, a cost of living increase. I'm 100% for it, and I would do it again.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, there's no question working for city and county government for most of my working adult life that I'm very empathetic to that. And we want to pay our county employees a very competitive wage. There's no question about that. But I find it interesting that we're talking about being financially, cautious with our money with unknown with COVID. And the raises are one thing, but the way that the current council members gave these raises, you don't pay the person, you pay the job. And that's where, this council, in my opinion, has failed with how they arbitrarily just give raises because they look at somebody's salary. You look at what the job is. You look at the job description. And that's how you determine what a person should be paid. We want our county employees to be very well compensated for what they do. There's no question about that. But this is where the courage comes in, again, to do the right thing and to do it the correct way. We need to have a salary allocation.
Thank you, Mike. Mike, that is your time. Thank you. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, I totally agree with what the council did because I sit on the council. We decided that $30,000 as minimum, there's people that they can't live on it and they're eligible for food stamps. And we felt that that was a necessary step to take. Also, it was a cost of living raise. I think that our county employees deserve to, that's what keeps them there with us. They're good employees. We've put in, invested a lot of money training them for what they do and so forth. And each one, their benefits are about $17,000 a year on top of their salaries. So I feel as if, that we do give a fair amount of money for our employees. Do they deserve more? Yes.
Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia. That is your time. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Could you repeat the question? I just want to hear how it was worded again.
Certainly.
Thank you.
Earlier this month, the county council approved raises for county employees, raising the base pay to $30,000 a year and giving across-the-board raises of 3% to employees earning up to $65,000 a year and 2% to employees making more than that. Do you agree or disagree with this decision? Why or why not?
Well, it's a tough year to make that decision. I'm glad that the council made with the decision they did. I mean, you got to take care of the people that are taking care of you. And if it put us in a situation where it would have hiked taxes, the answer would be a little different. But they're still able to provide all the services that we have been. We've been able to make that happen. I am for taking care of our employees. Mike mentioned that maybe that's not the best route to do it, across the board raises, and I don't disagree with them. I think there's different ways to look at it, and I know the council's done it different ways throughout the year. It's always a contentious conversation to have. So any input on different ways to do that is really good. But at the same time, yes, I do support the increases. And the reason is because, again, these people are working hard for us. These people are out there representing us. They're not always the highest paid positions, as a few people have pointed out tonight. And there is some other benefits in working for the county. But it's important to take care of the people that are taking care of you. Take care of the people that are taking care of our roads. Thank you,
Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Yes. Well, I mean, obviously, you always want to give cost of living raises to the people. I've read that there are county employees that are on food stamps. So that is quite worrisome that the wages are not adequate to make sure that they can support themselves. It's kind of disturbing, of course. But again, I would go back to what Mr. Brickner said here. You know, he's correct in saying that we should analyze exactly, you know, what each person is doing and sort of base our pay on that also. There might be some employees who have very bloated salaries, for all I know, and some that are being paid subpar wages. So that's why, again, I call for an efficiency audit to see if everybody is being paid fairly for the performance that they are giving to the county. And also, I would like to see if we can bring in some modern technology to update Porter County and make sure that services are being provided effectively and efficiently to all the people of Porter County. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Answering first on this question will be Mike. Please give one example from the council's current term of a decision or action that you think was handled well, or an example of a decision or action that could have been handled better.
Well, I think that the council came up with a capital improvement plan and have followed through very well with that plan. I think that we've seen a lot of improvements with the courthouse, the road improvements, and I think they now it's just a matter of completing some of those projects at the tail end of that plan. And you know what? So I think that that's what we're supposed to do as a council, is to come up with a plan like that. You know, kind of lay out how we're going to spend our residents' money. What are we going to spend it on? We talked about transparency, accountability, and really leadership. I mean, those are all qualities of leadership. And I think that allocating those funds and following through on those programs has really it's been something that the residents can actually see the improvements that have been made.
Thank you, Mike. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, I think that we made good decisions on helping with the county. I truthfully think that our county departments have a five-year lifespan on any technology. And it's automatically upgraded and improved at that time. A lot of times hidden in the budget are these county improvements that we don't even mention because it's with our equipment that is upgraded all the time. So I'm a little bit uncertain with what Susie was saying about upgrading our technology. In my opinion, it's top notch. And I wished I knew more about it. But I do well. But anyway, I think that I can't think of anything. I'm sure there's something we could have done better. But and if it was something, I wish somebody would have told me so I would have been able to ask that it be done.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, building off what Mike Brickner said, I think one of the best things that the council has done these last few years, and I happen to be part of it, was the $50 million investment that we did into the county. You had $20 million going to the South Haven sewer projects, which I don't know if you've seen the pictures of that. I've seen parts of it completed. The roads look great. The sidewalks look great. The curbs look great. It not only fixed the flooding issues or some of the flooding issues, but it also improved the streetscape out there. You have the building, the Porter County admin building, which was redone, the courthouse, the my mind's going blank, but the fairground building over there, which is absolutely beautiful. And it's just, you know, those were very, very positive moves. The new animal shelter, which I was also on the tail end of part of, very good moves. As far as what they've done wrong, I haven't seen anything blatantly that stands out to me. I think overall they've done a good job with things. And I think I'd like to be part of that to help continue that down the road.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response. Susie, hold on. You are muted.
I'm sorry. I thought I muted it. I would say some of the top things that I think the council has done well is, as Andy mentioned, the animal shelter. That's a really great addition to the community. The stormwater drainage, you know, issues have been solved there in South Haven, which is really great. And I really like the mobile voting mobile that's been going around town right now and, you know, to places where maybe there's not so much access for people to get to the voting booths. They can go right into the voter mobile and vote, which is great. So one of the things, though, I think they are really, of course, lacking on is, as I mentioned, the foundation. We need to set that up for grant-making process. And also, I've heard that there is not a detox facility here in Porter County for to treat addicts when they are going through withdrawal. And in fact, they are being put in the county jail. That's where they go to dry out. That was very disturbing to me. I believe that we need to make sure that we set up in some way, either through Porter Stark or with the hospital, a detox facility so that we can make sure that we are helping those who need help the most and not just sending.
Thank you, Susie. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, there's so many things I could cite, but it's been said already tonight. Yeah, the creation of the foundation was a big, big, big step. It gave the county the ability to, instead of make less than 1% on the money for the taxpayers, to be able to make on average of 7.8% on the money, which meant millions to our county. That enabled us to do the $50 million of projects that Andy has mentioned. There's so many on the list I could talk about. But the most important thing on that is we have put people to work. We've created jobs. We've boosted the economics of our county. And you just can't go wrong with that. And I can go on and on about the foundation. I know because I was the incorporator. I wrote the investment policy, and I also wrote the bylaws. So I'm very, very familiar. And in my 10 years as president of this county council, I've seen this council bring this county through some good years and some tough years. And we've made tough decisions and courageous decisions, Mike. And we've gotten this county to the most solvent county in the state.
Thank you, Dan. Sylvia, you'll be answering first for this question. The county council has the ultimate decision-making power regarding Porter County's fiscal affairs. As such, it can seem like the council may be more focused on numbers and budget details than individual people and families who live in the county. Can you give a real-life example of conversation or encounter that you've had with a county resident that influenced or could influence your work on the county council?
Well, what immediately comes to my mind is with some residents that had a problem with a subdivision being built next to them, which caused them a great flooding problem. I went with them to a hearing that the city was at, along with the county, and I felt that there was a good resolution to the problem. And I was very glad to be a part of that. I'm always available when a resident has a problem. I'm available to talk with them about it. And if there's any way that anything I can do to help them to facilitate a resolution, I'm available. And I'm very proud of that.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, as you mentioned, the county council does focus mainly on fiscal things. But in order to do that properly, you have to be out there talking to the people. You have to be out there talking to the department heads and figuring out what their goals are, where they're wanting to spend money, and why they want to spend that money. You have to talk to the community to find out where their investments are needed. One of the things that I had heard a few years ago was someone was complaining that they couldn't see the roads, the county roads at night. I was like, well, what do you do about that? And they suggested, well, you got to line the roads. And I didn't think of that. And I thought that was a great idea. So that was one of the things I talked to our highway department head about. And I know that's something they've been working on. It's an expensive project. But you're seeing more lines on the county roads, simple things like that. So, I mean, it's not, that's not fixed yet. It's a long-term project. I believe they're still working on it, but it's things like that. It's making yourself available to not only the community, but the people that are working for you in the county. And one of the first things I did as council president was meet with every department head to decide what their long-term goals were. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Okay, so yes, you know, I've been going around the county here the last few months and talking to many different people. And of course, you know, I, like everyone else, am going to be listening to the people of Porter County and be responsive to their needs and also to the employees of Porter County. Some of the people I visited are the wonderful Project Neighbors. They are building a new house, a respite house for drug treatment. It's you know, a place where people, men who are recovering from drug addiction, can live and get their lives back together. Also, I visited Andy's hometown, Burns Harbor, and I met his lovely wife. And I also was able to speak to some of the council members there, and they mentioned that they really could use help with the purchase of a new ambulance. So, you know, again, I just want to reach out to all the small towns and communities, if I do serve on the council, and find out what their individual specific needs are and how the council can address those needs. Because really, the council is in charge of the budget. So,
thank you, Susie. Right, thank you. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you, Tom. So one of the things I did when I was president of the county council, I actually did it several times, was to move our county council meeting around the county. We would have it in Hebron. We had it down in Couts. We had it at the Opera House. We had it up in Chesterton, so that we could hear from the people in these varying communities as to what their needs were and their priorities were. And we listened and we did things about it. We reacted and we followed through. So I think that's important. In my private life, my business life, I meet just hundreds of people. I have a volume practice where I assist so many families through very difficult times. And my mantra, again, I will say, is that everybody deserves a voice in government and everybody deserves a seat at the table. And I'm always, always open to discussions and I listen. I don't always agree, but I always listen. And I think that is the difference between a statesman and a politician. You have to be willing to listen.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Yeah, well, I'll kind of get right to it. The one thing I hear is that people that I talk to are concerned about what they're seeing nationally. And we haven't gotten to any how national politics might affect this race. But one thing, you know, that we have to be conscious of is people's safety. And I'm going to say it again. I said at the beginning, you know, we have a hidden jewel in the Mack Foundation. And, you know, in a time when, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Dan, Susie, or Sylvia, even though they're associated with a party that supports defunding police, support their base or, you know, terrorist groups like Antifa or BLM. But you know what? In a time where people are seeing what's happening, you know, nationally, we are not immune from certain things that could happen here in Porter County. And that's very important for people that I talk to. We're 45 miles away from the most dangerous city in the United States. And you know what?
Thank you, Mike. That is your time. And the League of Women Voters elects to go ahead and debate on the policies and the topics that affect the role and the position that candidates are running for. We all know about national politics, and we have social media, and we have our own conversations for those discussions. The discussions here tonight hopefully are going to continue to be based around the work of the Porter County Council. Thank you, Mike. Andy, you'll be answering this question first. Porter County includes more than 170,000 people who reside in cities, towns, and rural areas. What efforts have you made to get to know the people outside of your own local area, and how have you or how will you represent county residents who are different than you, either by virtue of where they live, their age, gender, race, income level, or other factors?
Well, one of the first things that I normally would do in this situation is knock doors. Me and my son love, we got a golf cart that's campaigned out. We love going knock people, knock people's doors and meeting them. With COVID, it's been a little restrictive. So we've tried to use different ways to get our message out. Obviously, you got signs polluting the county everywhere. We've used Facebook to try to get out there. I try to have smaller one-on-one meetings or maybe call my buddy and say, hey, you know, in South County, can you set up a couple of your friends to come over and we'll just have a small gathering, socially distant, where we can kind of introduce myself and get the message out. It's been a rough year to try to do that. But, I mean, all the newspapers have printed my cell phone number. I've made myself accessible to anybody that has questions. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on or white, black. It doesn't matter. If I'm elected to represent this county, then I represent everybody in this county, no matter who you are or where you're from. And that includes people that aren't even 18 and old enough to vote because you represent them, too. So I think it's very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response. Oh, Susie, please unmute yourself.
Again, I apologize. So really quick, I just want to circle back to what Mr. Brickner said. I just want to tell you the Democratic Party is not anti-police. I certainly support the police. And as somebody who's been a victim of a crime, I've called the police before for their aid and assistance. So I do respect the police. Black Lives Matter, I do not consider them a terrorist organization, but instead I would think that the fair way to describe them is an advocacy group on behalf of African-American people in our society who have been unjustly persecuted for a very, very long time. And so they are trying to really illuminate what's going on. So in terms of getting to know people across the county, I tend to, of course, rock the vote from the Democrats' side here that we had a few weeks ago. And just over the weekend, I did attend the Freedom Rally, and I met actually Mr. Brickner. So I have always been the type of person that reaches out across the aisle, and I try to meet people from all parts of the county, all socioeconomic levels, all ages, from very, very little all the way to very elderly. As you can probably tell, I'm a very friendly person.
Thank you, Susie. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you, Tom. First off, I'd like to say that as a former police officer of so many years, to hear someone insinuate that because of my party affiliation, I'm anti-police, it's ridiculous and offensive. But beyond that, I do pride myself on being someone who likes to engage and listen to people, and whether it's in your political life, it's in your professional life, or in your personal life. I like to talk with folks. I like to hear their life stories. I like to hear the challenges that they have. And I like to be able to help them through them. I mean, life throws us curves. No matter who you are, no matter where you come from, no matter what your socioeconomic position might be, age, gender, race, I don't care. We're all battling this thing, this briar patch called life. And I think we have a fundamental mandate to help one another through, despite our differences. And we need to embrace our similarities. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to go back, Dan. I think at the beginning I said you, Sylvia, and Susie, you know, not part of that. It was the party. And I do know that you personally, what you just said, agree with you. But being in public service for, 30-plus years, in law enforcement, and now, in community corrections, I have the opportunity to speak and really mostly just listen. And I think that's part of really a key characteristic trait that a lot of politicians, not saying that I'm a politician, but people get into politics lack, have a tendency to talk too much and not listen enough. And it's listening to what our constituents have to say. What's on their minds and remembering that we represent them. Again, this is not a career job. It's an opportunity, and it's a privilege when you have an opportunity like this to serve other people. And that's the reason that I want to get into, I got into this race and want to serve on the council.
Thank you, Mike. That is your time. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Thank you. My entire adult life has been serving people. I spent 37 years as being a registered nurse and a family nurse practitioner. I've seen people at their worst moments. And also with Porter County 4-H, I was 11 years as a leader. I met people all throughout the county. And that was a wonderful opportunity because you met their children as well as themselves. And I felt a strong drawing to get into government because I've always wanted to help. And I think that people know that they can call me, that they can respond to me. And for whatever reason, I'm glad that I'm on the county council. And it's not how long you've been on the council. It's the job that you are doing. And I think that, you know, that and the people in this county know where I stand.
Thank you, Sylvia. Susie, you'll be answering first for this question. As you see things, what are the top issues facing the Porter County Council in the upcoming term?
Yes, well, the top issue, of course, is to deal with any type of budgetary shortfalls that we might encounter due to the pandemic and the ensuing, of course, economic crisis. We are in a pickle here, and we might have to deal with some really tough decisions in terms of the budget. Also, of course, dealing with the foundation money, hopefully setting up a grant-making process and starting to get some of that money out to the local charities that desperately need it because they are at the front line. Those type of conversion foundations are, in fact, meant to deal with health, welfare, and well-being needs of the community. And I really think that right now, during this pandemic, we need to make that a top priority, instituting the foundation grant-making process and getting out that money to the people who are in dire need. So, you know, there are other things, many other things, of course. As I mentioned, getting a detox facility established is one of my top priorities as well. And, you know, mental health services as well.
Thank you, Susie. Dan, you have 60 seconds for your response.
So I would agree with Susie that one of our top priorities is going to be the challenge of the finances. As I've said, we're going to be feeling a little bit of financial hit here, which is why we wanted to, at the inception of the foundation, build up 2 years of operating funds so that we would never have to go back to the till to try to fund county government. But certainly I would suggest that I've got the experience at helping shepherd this county through difficult times. I was the chairman of the county council when we went through the last recession and the inordinately high number of foreclosures and trying to help folks through. But I really believe that making our county affordable, flatlining the tax rate as we've done in the wake of putting all of these folks to work, providing all of these services that we've done, updating all of our departments, I think that's paramount to what folks want and expect from their fiscal body, the county council. So I will continue that stead, and I will continue my work.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, to kind of get right to it, COVID is real, and it's something that we have to deal with. But at the same time, we cannot let this paralyze progress in moving forward with our county. We have to take precautions. And I do, myself, around vulnerable residents and family members, but we still have to move forward and come up with a second capital improvement plan. We have $174 million sitting in the foundation. We have to spend it wisely, but that has to be through a plan. I've come up with a second capital improvement plan. We need to invest a large amount of money into managing our roads, catching up to where our roads can be managed and be repaving and repairing on a annual basis that are manageable. We need to invest in the MAC Center. We need to invest in public safety. That's something that is, there's no question about that. And again, you know, we have to get our kids back. Our kids need to be in school, and we have to have people back.
Thank you, Mike. That is your time. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
I assume everybody thought the first answer is going to be COVID, because that's obviously the biggest thing that's going to be on our plate next year is, or if I'm so elected, would be on our plate to deal with the potential downfall of the money generated from tax revenues. So it's very concerning. Obviously, that's going to be the first thing we handle. But it's also important that we're taking care of our other infrastructure in the community, as Mike had mentioned, the roads, the buildings, continuing to do that. So it's going to be very, next year is going to be a very, I can't think of the word. It's escaping me right now. But it's going to be a rough year because it's just like this year. We're going to have to take a close look at budgets. We're going to have to keep people's budgets as low as possible, hoping for no increases, you know, pending. I'd like to see us give to work with the sheriff more to make sure that the officers are trained, not that they're not trained, but give them more training to deal with all this stuff that's going on in the world right now.
Thank you, Andy. And we've got time now for one last question. And Dan, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. Sylvia, I apologize. I skipped over you there.
Okay.
You have 60 seconds for your response. Sorry.
Would you repeat the question with all this going on?
Absolutely. As you see things, what are the top issues facing the Porter County Council in the upcoming term?
Well, as mentioned by everybody, COVID is going to be something that's on all of our minds. And it's going to take experience to know what line items you can draw from and where the money is. And that only comes with experience. I think that transparency is going to be extremely important so that the people are aware of what we are doing. And I feel like our council has been very transparent with the people. I think that Mike's mentioned something about capital improvements. They're on the drawing board. They are coming down the road, believe me. There's several that I would like to talk about, but this is the commissioner's position to do that. And but there are things that are coming down the road, and we are going to keep improving Porter County. I think that we're...
Thank you, Sylvia.
Sorry.
That is your time. Okay, the final question here. Dan, you'll be answering first. Have you lived outside of Porter County? And if so, how has it helped you understand Porter County's particular strengths and challenges that it faces? And what aspects of living in Porter County do you appreciate the most?
Well, certainly I was born and raised in Porter County, so this is my hometown, my home county. But I did serve in the Middle East. I did two tours as a combat army veteran, and I did get to experience countries and areas that have turned their back on democracy and have stopped listening to the people. And that is not a place I want to live. And it made the road back home so much better to come to a county that's safe and flourishing and successful. And it made me appreciate my county. And as a police officer in Lake County, I saw crime rates that were higher than our county, which is why it was so important to me to be pro-law enforcement, pro-public safety, fund things such as our safe schools initiatives through the Sheriff's Department. Making our county safer and safer as with our time in office. And so that's been my experience outside our county and what I've been able to do with that rare perspective coming home.
Thank you, Dan. Mike, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, thank you. Again, as Dan, I was born and raised in Porter County, graduated of Chestnut High School, lived in South Haven, growing up as a kid. And, I mean, this is my home. And I've had the opportunity to travel throughout the country, most of it on, you know, pheasant hunting trips. But still, I've just had a chance to see different places. And, you know, I think that sometimes we take good things for granted when we see it every day. And that's one thing maybe as you get older, you seem to get wiser, hopefully, kind of a place where I am right now and say, you know what, really appreciate what we have. And it doesn't mean that we don't want to progress, but we want to do it in a wisely and we want to do it manageably. But we don't want to lose the feel of what makes Porter County so attractive. It's our agricultural landscape. It's the quality of life, which includes public safety, our schools, our parks, and investing in our infrastructure are all things that draw people here. And I think
that's thank you, Mike. That is your time. Sylvia, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Well, I didn't move to Porter County until I was married. I lived in Lake Station, Michigan City, and also Hobart, graduated from Hobart High School. We moved here because of the schools and the safety of the county and just the quality of life. And so we could have chose anywhere to live, but we chose Porter County, and it was for those reasons. And I think that, like Mike said, our parks and our county is so diverse, you know, from the shores of Lake Michigan clear down to the agriculture ground in South County. I think it's a very diverse county, and people enjoy living here because there's so much to offer. Our cities and towns are vibrant. They have festivals. It's a great place to live.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andy, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Okay, so actually I was kind of raised in Highland, Indiana. I was born in Hobart, but we moved to Highland right shortly after. So we moved out here in 96. My parents wanted a better school system. Not only that, but it was more rural out here. We were able to move into kind of the unincorporated Chesterton out here and have the woods and streams and different stuff we could go explore as kids, but still be close to the amenities, the Jewel Oscos at the time, Hauber's Video, stuff like that. So we were able to take this, our life, pick it up, move it here, and just expand upon it anymore. So it goes to talk about the quality of life, the parks, the amenities we have out here, the good schools that we have, people that care, because every single person on this video chat today obviously cares a lot about the community and the county. They wouldn't be running if they didn't. No one's here for a full-time job. No one, this isn't a full-time job. It's a part-time job. So, I mean, it just, I think Porter County has really done a good job at keeping that close-knit, small town almost feeling together. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Susie, you have 60 seconds for your response.
Yes, well, Tom, I've had the good fortune of living in many places all across the world, actually. I lived for a year in Paris, France. After college, I lived in New York City for 5 years. I lived in Indianapolis, Indiana for 5 years. I've also lived for extended periods of time in China, Brazil, and
you lived in China.
Plus, also Macedonia, which is the where my parents come from, and I do speak Macedonian. Zdravo site. So one thing that I think makes Porter County so wonderful is just our location. I mean, we are right there on the banks of Lake Michigan, the dunes, right next to Chicago. And when I think of this county, I see it as the potential powerhouse of renewable energy. And that's one of the things I'm going to be working on if I become your next county councilor. I'm going to make contact with the Indiana Economic Development Corporation and see if we can bring some business investment from all across the world for any kind of renewable energy jobs. The other thing is, I think it's a great place for film locations, and I'd like to advertise it as such.
Thank you, Susie. That is your time. We've drawn numbers to decide the order of the closing statements for the Porter County Council at Large debate. The order is as follows: Sylvia Graham, Mike Brickner, Susie Tulefsky, Dan Witten, and Andy Bozak. Ms. Graham, you have 60 seconds for your closing statement.
Well, I've literally lived my entire adult life in Porter County, and I've been a service person during all of that time, and I feel as if I know the Porter County people very well. I've been on the council 3 times, and I have voted for Porter County's future. The capital projects is going to be what keeps our county going in these bad, if we do develop bad times. But we are physically and financially in a very good position to take care of ourselves. I enjoy what I'm doing. I am available, and I hope that I get to serve another term. Thank you.
Thank you, Sylvia. Mr. Brickner, you have 60 seconds.
I'm seeking this spot, again, I've said this before, you know, at this point, at this juncture, you know, our county government, you know, really needs to have leadership and experience, not in politics, but in administrative experience. I mean, this needs to be run almost like a business. And it's not a time to be in county government because it's fun or because you've been doing it for a long time. I mean, we need fresh eyes, fresh blood, especially to get us through now some very challenging times. And the county council has done some good things, but it's time for, again, you know, new ideas. And, you know, and the proper leadership, you know, to guide our residents as they deserve through what's ahead. And there are a lot of unknowns. So that's why I'm going to bring the council. That's why I'm running. And I just appreciate anybody's support and hope to get your vote on November 3rd or before. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brickner. Ms. Tulefsky, you have 60 seconds for your closing statement.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Linda. Boy, I feel like I'm in the Kentucky Derby horse race here, and we're all jockeying for the top three positions. And I hope I'm going to end up being in the top three here and serve on the county council. It would certainly be my honor and privilege. I am running again because I believe this county really needs some major changes coming up in the future and to prepare it for the next 10, 15 years in terms of economic growth. I am interested in trying to attract green energy, renewable jobs to this county because we are perfectly situated. It's literally a $3.4 trillion industry in renewable energy, and we can be a powerhouse. I'm also running because I believe that we really need to push to set up the grant-making process in the foundation, which, again, the county council has failed to do, and for years, even if it's 4 years, Dan, but I think it's much, much longer than that. We cannot wait anymore because we are in the middle of a pandemic, and we want to make sure we're getting help out to the people with that money that does belong to the people of Porter County. Please check out my Facebook page at Susie for Porter County Council. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susie. Mr. Witten, you have 60 seconds for your closing statements.
Thank you, Tom. As I've said, I've spent nearly my entire adult life in service of the public as a combat veteran, and a police officer, and now as an elected official. I take great pride in helping people, in trying to improve their quality of lives. And actually, it's not the county council that would create the foundation grant program. It's actually the foundation board, which has 10 members. We've already started that process, actually. And with respect to the environmental issues, I take pride in serving on a council that is environmentally conscious and has done things like funding the green cars for the Sheriff's Department, funding impervious surface water programs to stop erosion and those sorts of things. So I think that we are well on the right track, and we have a county that's solvent, one of the lowest tax rates in the state, putting millions and millions of dollars worth of people to work. I don't know why we're talking about change.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. Bozak, you have 60 seconds for your closing statements.
I guess one of the things that I got to start off with is families is what makes Porter County great. It's you and I, well, not you because you live in Lake County, but the rest of us that live in Porter County. It's one of the best places in the country to raise your kids. I know. I've got four young kids here. And I'll tell you, the schools are great. The parks are great. The streets could always be better, but we're in Northwest Indiana. I mean, you know, you're going to get some snow and stuff. But I just feel that I could be a voice for the people. Like I mentioned earlier, you've got my cell phone number. It's out there. Feel free to give me a call. That's my personal cell number. It's not going to change once I'm elected. It was the same number as it was a few years ago when I ran. I'm asking for your vote today because I want to be your voice. And I know that sounds, everybody says that, and it just sounds so old school, but it's true. I will be accessible to you. I give out my cell phone number freely, and I'm going to make sure that I'm in a conservative voice on that council for you. So I'm asking for you to vote for Bozak on or before November 3rd. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy. And as a Boone Grove graduate, I have spent a considerable amount of time in Porter County. Thank you all for participating in tonight's debate. It should be noted that Craig Kenworthy chose not to debate this evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Porter County Council at-large debate here on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. We'll have full election night coverage here on 89.1 FM beginning at 6 p.m. and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org as well as on Facebook Live. Thank you and good night.